Periods of deep economic downturn get a lot of people wondering if there's a better way of organizing our economy and, by extension, our society. Today's guest already had some thoughts in that vein, even before the Great Recession, from which we are still emerging. Since the recession, he has revised an earlier book that now bears the title After Capitalism, Economic Democracy in Action. The book is built around the progressive utilization theory, often just called PROUT for short. Dada Maheshwar Ananda is a monk, a writer, a social activist, and the director of the PROUT Research Institute of Venezuela. By our good luck, he happens to be traveling through the area and is our guest in the studio. Good to have you here, Dada.
Thank you, Jeff. It's great to be here.
It's very good to have you. We had a discussion yesterday of the poor saving capitalism, more like a working within our current system. I sense your approach is somewhat more changing than that.
Yes, Jeff. A system that doesn't work for everybody doesn't work, in my opinion. I try to feel that I'm a part of humanity. The human family is my family. We have to make a system that doesn't exclude anybody, that helps everybody, that takes care of everybody, and to make we can share the resources of this planet to make a beautiful world.
Now, the original version of the book came out, looks like 11 years ago, and
right.
I can imagine what has transpired since has only deepened that conviction.
Right, very much so. And the world has changed so much, and the movement for PROUT and for a better world for cooperatives has also changed so much that I really needed to make a whole new book, and that's what this is.
It really is a gutting of what was there before.
Right.
So the we'll call him the godfather of the book, P.R. Sarkar, Prabhat Ranjan Sarkar. Tell us about him.
He was an interesting gentleman. He was born in India. He passed away in 1990. So for 12 years, I had the opportunity to meet him every year. I was working in Southeast Asia at that time. I trained in India. My first meeting with him was in his prison cell because for 7 years he was a political prisoner because of his stand against corruption, against the exploitation of women and the caste system. I never met anybody who seemed to have so much unconditional love for me and everybody else. So he inspired me to dedicate my life as a monk. And that's what I've been doing. As a monk, a celibate monk, I wear bright orange, which means my life is dedicated to humanity. And it means I can work 24/7. I can go anywhere, in the world, and that's what I do.
In P.R. Sarkar's case, I mean, this great love for humanity, but led to this creation of the progressive utilization theory, which, I mean, as spiritual a person as he appears to have been, he also had some awareness of economic principles. So did it begin as a spiritual idea that sort of spread to economic, or did it go in the other direction, or does it really matter, I suppose?
I think he was a great spiritual master, and yes, he started teaching meditation first, and then later on he developed this theory, this model, which is an alternative to both capitalism and to communism. It's based on cooperatives. The progressive utilization is based on cooperatives, on economic self-reliance of every region. It's based on ethics, and it's based on universal and ecological spiritual values.
Is it counter to the current trend of globalism? When you talk about every region has to have its own economic self-reliance, that would perhaps indicate that...
I believe in globalizing humanity and localizing the economy. I think that a local economy is much better than a corporate-owned economy where 90 cents on your dollar when you buy at a big box store, when you buy at a chain restaurant, when you put your money in a commercial bank, 90% of your dollar goes to investors who live in other countries. And we need a local economy where the money stays in the community, circulates, creates jobs, creates income for everybody.
Lest anybody think, and I know you've mentioned communism once in passing,
right.
But I'm sure the first thing is, if he's talking about anything but capitalism, he's got to be a communist or a socialist or something.
Right.
There's a good example in the book of why this is not expressly Marxist, which is the reaction in India of the Communist Party to PROUT.
Right.
They were not exactly embracers, to put it mildly.
They saw us as a major competition. We were attracting poor people to the PROUT movement, and they reacted strongly, persecuted us. Marxism had the dream of a better world for everyone. However, he wrote 3,000 plus pages analysis of capitalism, which to this day is incredibly insightful. What he wrote about the alternative, it's like a few sentences scattered among these 3,000 pages, all these different books, sentences. It says that the workers should consider, owning the means of production, period. That's about the extent of it. And I think that the progressive utilization theory is a much deeper and clearer model of something that can – and that's why there were so many problems with every communist country there's been in the world. There's been totalitarian regimes. Their own people have not liked it. Actually, the people brought down the Soviet Union, not the United States, despite 70 years of efforts, militarily, economically, politically. It was the people themselves who got fed up with this system, and they brought it down. So I think this is an alternative model that makes sense, that's practical, and that's possible.
We'll talk about some of the fundamentals of Prout, the progressive utilization theory as espoused by Dada Maheshwar Ananda, in the book After Capitalism, Economic Democracy in Action. He does have a couple of appearances at the University of Oregon next Tuesday and Wednesday coming up. We'll tell you more about those. We'll hear more from Dada, and we'll take your phone calls and emails when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. We're talking about capitalism again today. Yesterday, we talked with John Hope Bryant about his idea of how the poor can save capitalism. Sticking with the system, today's guest is perhaps a little more radical, if you want to look at it that way, in doing something other than capitalism. Dada Maheshwar Ananda's book is called After Capitalism, Economic Democracy in Action. You can join our discussion on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. Check out our Facebook page, and you can see Dada in the studio with us just a few moments ago. The appearances we mentioned just before the break, Tuesday, October 7th at 7:30 at the University of Oregon in Eugene. Looks like 1501 Kincaid is the building on campus where that'll be held. And then again on Wednesday, October 8th, also at the U of O at the Library Collaboration Center at 2 in the afternoon. Chances to hear Dada Maheshwar Ananda speak. If you don't have a chance to continue to listen to the program right now, but I hope you get a chance to do that. So let's start digging into some of the issues with Prout, the progressive utilization theory,
yes,
which you're espousing. And apparently you get asked the question very often is it implemented now on a national level? And the answer is
no. However, there are models of Prout in practice around the world, movements, projects, which are, promoting these values. It's kind of like cooperatives. In the last century, Jeff, there was this great debate between capitalism and communism, this fight. And, they both tend to be rather dogmatic. Capitalism more and more tries to privatize everything. And communism mostly tries to make everything as far as possible state-owned. Well, cooperatives have been this invisible force for over 100 years where, the workers own their own enterprises. And it's actually all three systems work well in different situations. Capitalism works great on a small scale, but the trouble is this corporate capitalism, which I think is, terminally ill. I think it's going to collapse. I don't know when. But it's terminally ill, and we need an alternative.
Discussions like this certainly seem to gain traction at this point in history when we've just emerged or are emerging from still a major recession, and there is still the ongoing issue of income inequality, very pronounced in America right now, perhaps getting more so. And I think what I'm reading in your book, though, is that you see wealth inequality as a natural product of capitalism, not a byproduct.
Right, when there are no limits. Jeff, in this country, people, there's a minimum wage, right? $7.64 or something, I forget, minimum wage, right? I ask people, is there a maximum wage? And they usually say no. But I say in the federal government, there is. In the federal government, the pay scale of every new employee, it's something like $16,000. If I get right, $16,000 a year, something like that. And exactly 10 times higher than that is the maximum wage of a Supreme Court judge, of a senator, congressman, president, vice president. Now, Obama just did change it slightly, so it's like four times a little bit higher than that. So it's like
– well, Congress had to pass it.
Yeah,
he does
right.
get paid more than previous
yes,
presidents.
But usually it's 10 to 1. And every general, every officer, everybody in the government, in federal and also state and city governments, they all have these pay scales. And everybody considers that normal and rational and reasonable. You know, like, you know, $160,000 is okay, you know, that you can get by with that. Why don't we consider something similar for society at large? It's radical. I told you I'm radical.
Well, that begs the question, like, because the often listed reason for going so high, particularly with CEO salaries, and we can talk about your feelings about multinationals, but the feeling about CEO salaries as well, but, you know, so much is on the line for them. They have to do so much to make sure that the company stays healthy, et cetera.
Yeah.
So much pressure, so much hard work, long hours, weekends.
And conservatives call it, you know, pay for performance, even mm-hmm. though performance has nothing to do with their salaries, you know, and their bonuses. Even when the company, you know, collapses, they're still getting paid extra bonuses, you know. No, it doesn't make sense. It's not reasonable. And people, you know, you can increase your performance to a certain degree, you know, some more income, yeah, you can work harder. But how many hundreds of times harder can you work? How many hours are there in a day that you can work, you know? No, the performance does not go up exponentially 100 times, 200 times like the CEO salaries are. No, they don't. You know, I think a much smaller difference between the lowest and the highest pay scale. In Norway, it's only five times, and that's like the richest country in Europe. And everybody's satisfied with that. In government, you know, five times, sure, that's plenty.
Five times the average worker?
Five times the lowest worker.
Really?
Yeah, the starting salary and the highest salary in government mm-hmm. is only 5.3 times difference, and they're trying to bring it down.
In government, but do they have any...
No, in government. Yeah. In government, no.
Outside government, yeah.
Proud is not yet established in the world. It's true. I'm radical.
What is the major bone you've got to pick of multinational corporations? We already talked about some issues with globalization. You're much more... Proud itself is
right.
much happier with
right.
with local economic systems functioning well. Self-sufficiency.
Right.
Is that where multinational corporations run afoul of Proud?
Well, there's a lot of things, actually. One is, yes, the accumulation of wealth is extreme. Capitalism is all about competition on the small scale, but not on the big scale. When they get monopolies, they just control the prices like anything. They make secret deals among themselves to control the prices, you know. They advertising. I mean, how can a mom-and-pop restaurant compete with McDonald's in advertising, you know? And Walmart's, you know, they close down all these local stores, but nobody keeps an account of how many jobs are lost because of Walmart coming in. They only count the, you know, low-paying jobs that Walmart provides. So they're not just. They don't work equitably.
Dada Maheshwarananda, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is After Capitalism, Economic Democracy in Action. We have a message here from Julian Ashland asking if you believe there are underlying principles that unify humanity that would actually get us all on the same page.
Yes, Jeff. Julie, I think very much that the unifying principle, first of all, is that we're one human family. When we really believe that, we can't exclude people. We certainly can't kill people in capital punishment. You know, if a patient is sick in the hospital, we don't kill them if we can't cure them, you know. So it changes the way we look at schools. It changes the way we – and this unifying principle is that we all belong to the human race. We all belong to this planet Earth. We have to save the planet. We have to share the resources of the planet. There's enough for everyone. If we share, there's not enough for everyone's greed. You know, just what Gandhi said, you know, for everyone's need, but not for everyone's greed. So those are pretty unifying principles, in my opinion.
Let us take a call from Paul in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We'll need a pair of headphones on you, Dada. Sorry about that. Paul in Grants Pass, go ahead. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dada Maheshwarananda.
Good morning. I think all of these ideas are wonderful ideas. Unfortunately, the problem with any utopian vision, I'm a big fan of Michael Tellinger's Ubuntu movement. The problem with any utopian vision and any utopian movement is it works great until you plug in the crazy monkeys. And that seems to be the problem. Unless you can get a true shift in consciousness and a true shift in values, you're going to run into the same problem, and someone will find a way around any structure that, you know, I deal with that every day. People will find a way to deal with the existing structure to their benefit, as opposed to the benefit of all. The second observation that I would make is that there has never been a society outside of certain tribal societies that has survived without an underclass. The minute you have a social organization, there are menial tasks that must be done. How you treat those people in most cultures traditionally has been as a slave or as a very low caste individual with very, very limited benefits. The idea of a minimum wage and operating that way took most of the onus and most of the responsibility from the slaveholders and put the onus and responsibility onto the social safety nets of more advanced governments. And we're right in the same situation we've always been in. And I'll take my comments off the air.
All right. Thanks for that, Paul. Appreciate it.
To respond briefly, consciousness, education, and values are fundamental to Prout. And I totally agree that both are necessary. We need to make laws that are appropriate and that establish justice. You know, we have laws, for example, against murder and violence in every country of the world, Jeff. But we don't have laws against greed. And capitalism actually promotes greed. And I think we need laws that would reduce that. And the progressive utilization theory is all about that. I also agree. I kind of disagree with the idea about the underclass, okay? Let me mention one simple example. If you go to any third world country where there's a lot of poverty, all the middle class houses have a cook and often a cleaner living in the house. They're damn cheap. You know, you can pay a very low salary and get a full-time cook, a full-time maid in your house. In this country, you don't see that. Only the very richest families can afford to pay a decent salary for a full-time cook or a live-in maid or any other person full-time, right? And yet the whole society exists very well without full-time maids and full-time cleaners. Everybody cleans themselves and cooks themselves or do something else. So, I mean, I don't agree that you need that underclass. You need slaves or something like that. I disagree with that. And I think we can make a beautiful society, and there are cooperative communities, there are local economies that are working perfectly all over the world without any underclass.
Dada Maheshwarananda, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is After Capitalism, Economic Democracy in Action. It is centered around Prout, the progressive utilization theory. He is the director of the Prout Research Institute of Venezuela and a monk and a writer and a social activist. And you can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about this subject matter. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. Let's go to Derek in Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dada Maheshwarananda.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, and I hope you haven't covered this already. So how about this for a more radical idea, or a radical idea that's more palatable to the capitalist? I love his response. Instead of capping the income, how about just a much more progressive taxation of the profits in order to keep the engine of, at least the positive aspect of engine intact with the capitalism, and then shore it up with what we used to have, and that's antitrust and not government ownership, but government hemming in the negative stuff that we don't like about capitalism. And I'd love a response on that.
All right. Thanks for that, Derek. Appreciate it.
I think they're great ideas, Derek. I think the idea of all kinds of progressive taxation to tax the rich instead of not taxing the rich, which is what we've been doing for the last few decades, makes a lot of sense. Eisenhower, President Eisenhower, was playing golf with a bunch of the multinational CEOs, and they were complaining about the all the taxation, 90% at that time, you know. And he says, I think my salary is okay. Why do you need more than my salary? I think that's quite reasonable. You know, what are you guys all upset about? You know, and at that time, that was reasonable. And they couldn't argue with that. So I totally agreed that any kind of progressive taxation and reforms to limit the wealth are totally wonderful and should be promoted. I'm just talking about a future vision and what I think, you know, we should be shooting for. Regarding the antitrust laws, the same way.
Well, the issue of regulation is a really interesting one, and I'm sure you've watched with mouth agape just a bit over the course of the years since the original edition of After Capitalism came out, because there are so many bits of evidence that show that it was excesses in the current system and lack of regulation that led to the financial crash, and yet the response from a lot of the responsible parties is, hey, you know, if we were even less fettered than we are now, we could do so much more.
Jeff, that's interesting because, you know, there's different ways to look at the crisis, at the financial crisis that happened. And the simple way of looking at it is, oh, there weren't enough regulations, and if there are proper regulations, that won't happen anymore. But a more fundamental way of looking at it is that the capitalist system and greed without question, you know, greed is good, as they said in Wall Street, you know, that doesn't work. And that's going to fundamentally keep sending people around the laws, around the regulations. And my God, they have legal corruption in this country. You can pay lobbyists to get a tremendous amount of money to every single candidate, every single political leader to do whatever you want. I mean, and that's legal. So I think that we need a kind, you know, in addition, as the previous caller said, in addition to regulations and laws, we need to be changing consciousness. I'm in the consciousness raising business. This is what I do for a living, you know. I think that by changing values and making values that are more equitable, we can make a beautiful world. Together, nothing's impossible.
Let's take another call. We have Jacob in Springfield on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dada Maheshwarananda. His book is After Capitalism.
Hi, good morning. There's a saying, stupid is as stupid does, or you know evil men by the evil that they do, okay? And I actually say we're not a capitalist society because you look at our own behaviors as an individual. Most Americans do not partake in a capitalist economy. By the Small Business Bureau, they say 10% of Americans are self-employed or own a company, and only 1% of Americans actually own a business that employs one other non-family member, meaning like they're an employer for somebody, okay? By far, if we were a capitalist society, we'd be more like, you know, the kid who owns a lemonade stand. And I'd say by that definition, communist China is actually far more capitalist than America. And by far, and it's working. China is working. It's an economic growth engine. Now, what I'd say, America has problems, and it's not because of capitalism predominantly. We're not really a capitalist society, as I just pointed out. We're kind of a scatterbrained society that has a lot of different systems, and they're all poorly executed. You want, let's say, an income, limit. We do have that, and that's with the government. And we also have other income systems, and you multiply that with 50 states, in hundreds of cities, we have just about everything. And it's not dictated from above, and that's in some ways the rule of capitalism. There's no central rule that's put down by the government or whatever ruling institution. We just have a scatterbrain of everything, a shotgun approach to government. And there are problems, but it's not just due to capitalism. I think there's a far more problems with paranoia.
All right, let's get a response. Thanks for that, Jacob.
Yeah, it's interesting what you're saying, Jacob, about the the very small numbers of people who actually own their own businesses. It's true. It's very few. And the failure rate of startup private businesses is extremely high. I've talked to economists. They cannot find good statistics on this. The government doesn't produce it. It would take a lot of money to really search it out to find out. But the failure rate is way over 40% in the first year of operation and way over 60% in the fifth year. Many people say that the failure rate is much closer to 80 or 90%, but I can't prove it. So there's a lot of failure rate in private enterprises. Cooperatives have a much lower failure rate. In the first 5 years, only 12% of cooperatives have failed in the first 5 years. And those are very carefully monitored because the credit unions are very interested in cooperatives. You know?
All right. Let's talk more about cooperatives and some of the other fundamentals of Prout, the progressive utilization theory upon which the book After Capitalism is based. Back with Dada Maheshwarananda and you in a minute five. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Dada Maheshwarananda. He's a social activist, a monk, a writer, the director of the Prout Research Institute of Venezuela. Prout is the progressive utilization theory. Whoops, almost forgot it there for a second. And it is the central concept in Dada's book, After Capitalism, Economic Democracy in Action. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Email is jx@jeffnet.org. Let's come to some of the major points about Prout itself, because you've talked several times about co-ops here. One of the first fundamental tenet of Prout is there's no physical wealth collection without the permission of the collective body.
Correct. Well, you know, we have it the opposite, that you can accumulate as much as you want, but there's not enough for everyone. We need five planets for everybody to have the good lifestyle that Americans want. We don't have enough resources. We don't have enough planets. So that's fundamental, that yes, you can have a wage, you can have a higher wage, 2, 3, 4, 5 times higher, up to 10 times, but not 1,000 times. No, it doesn't make sense. And the same way countries cannot be allowed to accumulate resources and corporations cannot be allowed to accumulate resources.
So there's an upper limit is what it gets down to.
Yes.
It's like what you were talking about a minute ago, the Eisenhower era taxes, which got as high as 92% of the top marginal rate.
And yet, exceptions. Sure, somebody is paraplegic. They need a really, really expensive, wheelchair, computerized and everything. No problems. I mean, exceptions are fine as long as we, consider society.
All right, the second fundamental tenet of Prout, the progressive utilization theory, maximum utilization and distribution of mundane, supramundane spiritual potentialities.
Yeah, it's complicated. It means physical resources. It means intellectual resources. And it means something even more esoteric, which is in spiritual sphere. And that these should be utilized for the welfare of everyone. They should not be abused. They should not be exploited. But they should be utilized in the best way possible for everyone.
So it comes back to a real sense of not wasting what you've got, either in humanity or in natural resources. Because one of the complaints about capitalism in the book is the exploiting and the ignoring of the natural environment.
Right. And of people both, the exploiting of people. And obviously the planet is not sustaining that and the planet is reacting. And we have to save this planet fast or we're not going to have a planet to live on.
All right, let's grab the headphones. Got a bunch more calls for you. Let's talk to John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dada Maheshwarananda. His book is After Capitalism.
Hi. Well, I'd like your guest to comment on this. If obviously capitalism has this greed problem, which stinks, traditionally in the Soviet Union, they had the opposite problem, which was lack of incentive. And if you ever talk to people or read stories about what was going on over there, the joke used to be that the office worker shows up at 10, lunches at 11, they get back at 2, and they go home at 3. And they had just a horrible situation over there with people just didn't want to work hard because, you might be working your tail off and the guy next to you does nothing and you get paid the same. So anyway, any your guest comments on that, the lack of incentive problem.
All right. Thanks for that, John. Appreciate it.
Yes, I totally agree. And that's why, you know, there was tremendous alienation in every communist society, really. Most people, yes, they were alienated. They're working for a government. They don't feel that they own it. And yet, what we can have difference of salaries. We can have one time more, two times. Usually cooperatives have like three times maximum the difference between the highest and the lowest salary. So with time and experience, you keep getting more money. But not unlimited. That's my only point. 10 times, I think it's fine. In federal government, people aren't complaining. There's no incentive. They do get incentives.
Back to Paul's question about trying to get systems to work with crazy right. monkeys, as he put right. it, involved there. I mean, Prout seems to assume a lot about the goodness, the inherent goodness of human beings and their desire to do well by themselves and by each other.
Well, yes. I mean, people want to do a good job, basically. And so you want to give them an opportunity to do a good job. You know, the best business leaders, they talk about, you know, investing in human resources as the most valuable possible investment you can make in people, in training them, in empowering them. Prout is all about that. Prout is not against that business model of human resource development. It's for it.
Here's another question from the phones. Let's go to Ed in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dada Maheshwarananda.
Oh, hi. Congratulations on your book. I hope it sells well.
Thank you.
I got a question. Let's say your book sells millions and millions of copies. And there's lots of writers that books, you know, either the books never get published or they sell really bad. And some of them aren't very good writers. Would you give your profits to them? Or would you choose to give it to whoever you wanted, or would you keep it yourself? And also, would you begrudge another successful writer of keeping their money and living a good life because they produced a beautiful book?
Where does the rubber hit the road for you, I guess, is the question. Thanks for that, Ed.
Well, I'm a monk, so you'd be surprised. I live the simplest life possible. So any money that comes in goes to raising consciousness work that I do and to social service projects that my life has been dedicated. My life is dedicated to service to people, not to me. So no question about my book money. Any money that comes in, it goes. Regarding others, yes, I think we should support writers. I mean, of course, all kinds of writer associations and clubs and things like that. But more than that, to have money, yes, but how much is the only question. $1 billion, you have no concept of what $1 billion is. It's such a large amount of money, you can't possibly spend it in a lifetime. Can't possibly. And yet people want more and more and more. And that's the nature of the human mind, to always want more. As much power as they get, they want more power. As much money they get, they want more money. And other things too. Sex, you name it. People go crazy. And to control the mind, that's where meditation comes in. When you have peace inside, when you feel love inside, you don't need things. The best things in life aren't things, as the wall says, you know. I mean, we can live a beautiful and happy life without going crazy over material accumulation.
Okay, in order to differentiate between our Johns and Grants Pass, this is Grumpy John in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dada Maheshwarananda.
Thanks very much. You can go on YouTube and see the drug lord mansion that has bricks and blocks and stacks of money. I mean, more money than you could push with a bulldozer. And that is the type of personality that runs our political system, our CIA, and the people who try to follow his generous outlook. Perhaps you know the name Allende. You might not be as familiar with Mubarak, but both of those people tried to divert their country's resources to the benefit of their people. And they were well-stoned, driven out by the CIA, killed.
Right.
Salvador Allende in Chile, sure. Yeah. And which you mean Hosni Mubarak in Egypt?
Yes, sir.
All right.
He ended up being deposed by our CIA, and they put in Shah Reza Pahlavi, who was one of the most brutal dictators.
You're talking about Iran.
Yeah,
you meant Mohammad Mossadegh, not Hosni Mubarak. Yeah.
Yes, I'm very sorry. But these people The CIA, the people who run things, are like drug lords, and they have no limits on their greed. I don't understand why, when somebody ends up with more money than they could possibly spend in their lifetime, from then on, all their income must be generated by planetary supporting enterprises. Just flip the switch. Now you've got to work for the planet because you can't possibly spend all your money. I would love to see that happen. I just don't anticipate it happening. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Grumpy John. Any thoughts on that?
I agree that the CIA certainly has been working for generations to support the multinational corporations. They did it in Chile. They're doing it in other countries around the world. They would like to depose a lot of people. I live in Venezuela, where they're trying to change the regime in Venezuela. The only difference is that the people are so much of the common people, more than 50% are still voting. 16 out of 17 elections have been won by Hugo Chavez and by his party, because the people really like the fact that everybody gets the minimum necessities of life. They all get free health care. They all get free universities. They all get a lot of good things.
Let's take another call. Here's Brad in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. The book is After Capitalism. The author and our guest, Dada Maheshwarananda.
Yeah, good show. And I liked Grumpy and John's comments there especially. We're told that if we just have the free market goes wild and everybody serves their own selfish interest, then it all somehow works out magically for us to, in general. But I don't think that's what happens. I think we get caught in this empty consumerism on the bottom end of things and an empty consumerism on the top end of things when people have more money than they know what to possibly spend. But neither ones are really happy. And it's based, the assumption is that if we're all selfish together, it comes out of Adam Smith. But I believe that Adam Smith added, we could look out for our self-interest while tending to the common good. And that part of his message somehow gets ignored. And so we end up with this enormous engine of everybody wasting their lifetime and spending planetary resources in order to generate what they think is a little bit of profit for themselves, but actually is massive profit to the people at the top who also don't have a happy life. So we have a kind of a crazy dysfunctional system. And in the midst of it, there's this rhetoric, this cynical kind of our government is only a problem. It will never do any good, and then we give it over to the corporations and to the wizards that run the ads to have a government that in fact is no good. So I want us to reclaim our government and to use it to benefit us. It's us taking care of ourselves. And when we have a government that does that, then it would compete with the market to provide essential services to people if the market isn't doing that fairly and intelligently. Like, for instance, with healthcare, to get into it so that we have our healthcare or education, all these things that we can't afford. Ordinary people can't afford any of this stuff.
All right.
We should have a government that helps us have that in general. I love this guy's basic premise.
All right. Thanks for that, Brad. Appreciate it.
And I love your idea about reclaiming our government. I think that's a wonderful cry. Adam Smith, yes, one time in all his writings, he mentioned the phrase invisible hand. And all his writings are so much against corporate capitalism. There was no, outside speculation. Everything was 100% productive economy that he was talking about. All was a local economy. So, yes, read Adam Smith by all means.
That part of the complaints about capitalism in the book really rang out. The concept that a lot of the activity in capitalism these days is in speculation, not in production. So essentially, people moving paper around to make money off of other people's moving paper around.
Off, what do you call it, hiring overseas instead of, moving jobs overseas instead of, in this country, yes.
You say that the Prout concept of housing, and again, we're talking about the progressive utilization theory, deserves special mention. Why? What's so special about the Prout
housing? Well, everybody deserves a house, first of all. Now, it can be a very simple house, okay, but everybody needs a house. And you work harder to get, move into a better house, to afford it. But housing is, the market is so speculative in nature that it's out of the range of the common people. Most people cannot ever hoped dream to own their own house. And that's a fundamental right. And as Michael Moore points out, you know, 50 years ago, everybody bought their own house. You know, every factory worker, you know, in 3 years could afford their house. Everybody. One person working in the family, not two, not three, you know. So
taxation. I mean, there's been some discussion about that so far. But, I mean, where does Prout view taxation? Is it generally confiscatory above a certain level?
Right.
And is it a lot simpler?
A lot simpler. Not the how many hundreds of thousands of pages is the
tax
latest
code fills a couple of shelves.
Yeah. No, it needs to be a lot simpler, and it needs to tax the upper strata. I'm sorry, the upper classes, not the common people. The middle class people shouldn't be paying any taxes. It's the rich people who need to be paying taxes. Yeah.
You are based in Caracas at the right. Prout Research Institute of Venezuela. Hugo Chavez obviously right. was about making sure that the common people have lots of stuff, as you mentioned. Not terribly popular with the United States or the CIA, but stuck it out until he died.
Right.
How does the Venezuelan government respond to your presence there? And are they tolerant? Are they embracing your concepts?
They're very interested. With, you know, Chavez called for a socialism for the 21st century, but he admitted that he didn't know what that meant because he said we have to create it from ourselves. We don't want a socialism from the last century. We don't want communism. We want something better. So this is called the progressive utilization theory. It's called progressive socialism by its founder, Prabhat Ranjan Sarkar of India. And I think it is a reasonable socialism that's progressive, that you know benefits everybody, and yet inspires everyone to work to their best, to empower people to be as good as they can be.
The book is called After Capitalism, Economic Democracy in Action. You can catch Dada Maheshwarananda at the University of Oregon, 7:30 at 1501 Kincaid on Tuesday at 7:30, Wednesday at 2 in the afternoon at the Library Collaboration Center. He's been our guest. Thank you so much for joining us on The Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff.
Pleasure. Tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange, co-housing for seniors at 8 o'clock. Vents Day, we'll talk about cities taxing pot in advance of the vote in Oregon and the Forest Service requiring permits for reporters in wilderness areas. And then we'll talk to Dick Bowles, the original What Color Is Your Parachute author, tomorrow at 9. Our producer, Charlotte Duren. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening.